Hey there, everyone. Welcome to Talk Kidney to Me, your new go-to podcast for all things kidney. We're excited to share this space with you. Whether you or a loved one received a kidney disease diagnosis, you work in the space, or you want to know more about this unique area in healthcare.
Millions have kidney disease, but many don't even know it. We're here to change that.
That's right, Pesh. And the most common causes of kidney disease are diabetes and high blood pressure, which affect more than half of the folks in the U.S. So everyone should be interested in kidney talk. But despite these numbers, kidney disease doesn't get the same attention as other chronic illnesses.
Talk Kidney to Me wants to help change that, featuring the two of us as co-hosts, Sarah Eve, the Kidney Care Pro, and me, Pesh Patel, the transplant recipient who started A Kidney Life. We'll have guests from the kidney community and beyond. Join us for a fun and informative 30 minutes. From nutrition and wellness to exciting innovation, no topic is off limits.
Together, we're bringing awareness, education, and a whole lot of inspiration to the kidney community. All right, here we go. Talk Kidney to Me. Hey, Pesh.
Hey, Sari.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Pretty good. Today is episode 2.
Oh, man.
It's a big one. It's a big one, full of suspense and plot twists. We're both going to share our respective kidney journeys. And I think we're going to leave you with a cliffhanger this week. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. And I think this episode will once again show us that in life, we can't take anything for granted. Mm. Just when we think we have things figured out, life has a way of saying not so fast.
Well, I can't wait to hear that. All right. So last week, you got to meet us and hear about our backgrounds. If you haven't yet listened to episode 1, go back and give that a listen. But we left off with both of us starting out in outpatient dialysis facilities. Me as a registered dietitian working at a busy clinic in Philadelphia, and Pesh was receiving in-center hemodialysis in Houston, Texas.
Right.
Yeah. So Pesh, right, we ended last episode. You just traveled back to the U.S. after crashing into dialysis in Australia. Mm-hmm. How about we pick up there? Pesh?
Yeah.
Talk kidney to me.
All right. So I'm back in Houston now at this point, and I am at one of, as you learned us last time, at an LDO, as a DaVita in Sugar Land, Texas. And I was doing hemodialysis, again, the port that was placed in Australia.
Okay, a CVC.
Yes.
Got it.
And it was Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday dialysis sessions, 4 hours each time.
Okay.
And I will say that I know I needed dialysis, but it was probably one of the toughest things I'd ever had to go through.
Physically, mentally?
All both. Of
it? Yeah.
Both. Mentally excruciating and just physically draining. Mm. It's one of those experiences where once I was done with mm-hmm. a dialysis treatment, mm-hmm. I'd be completely exhausted. But then by the time I started feeling better, mm-hmm. it was time for the next treatment.
Yeah.
So I felt like I never got out of that rut.
I'm going to quick pause here.
Sure.
So we're going to presume that a lot of folks listening and know what dialysis is. But let's just give a quick overview in case folks don't know what dialysis is, right? So hemodialysis is mm-hmm. cleansing someone's blood in the same way that a kidney would, right? So the kidneys do lots of things. They regulate the hormones for our blood pressure. They help us create red blood cells. Mm-hmm. They also help excrete right minerals and metabolites. And so dialysis, right, does all that. They clean your blood. The machine cleans out blood.
Yes.
It also pulls additional fluid, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when folks are on dialysis or have end-stage renal disease, they're not urinating as much, right? That's
right.
One of the things. And so we have to remove the extra fluid if you're not urinating that off. Mm-hmm. And so as you were saying, Pesh, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine they're literally pulling all of the blood out of your body, cleaning
right.
it, pulling the fluid out and putting it
yeah.
back in you. I mean,
it's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand how that would be draining.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Thank you for letting me do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one of the other issues was, which you just alluded to, was not just having the body filtered, but the swelling that I had, there's fluid restriction. I was limited to 32 ounces of fluid a day. So if you think about from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, only 32 ounces. So initially, I thought that meant I could only have 32 ounces of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
No. That means anything from your cooking to your drinking, to anything you consume in
fluids
the day,
mm-hmm.
that's all part of it.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't always abide by those rules.
Okay.
And
thanks
then,
for keeping it real, Pesh.
Yes, absolutely. And that's when you'd go home and you prop your feet up and you're like, wow, I'm a size 10. I look like a size 25 right now because of all the fluid that I built up from the ankles to the feet.
Mm.
And again, that's why I had to do dialysis. Mm. And there were times when I, for lack of better terminology, misbehaved.
Okay.
And that four-hour treatment turned into 6 hours.
So we'll say, for the clinicians, we'll say he was not always adherent to the care plan.
That is correct, unfortunately.
That's a nice way we say that, right?
Yes, yes. Another part of being stubborn is, hey, I still want to live life as much as I can
sure.
when I can.
We have to honor everyone's autonomy, right? Whatever, if you're seeing the patient, it's still your life, your body.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
Okay.
There was one time, actually, and with DaVita, in my case, I would still find times or try to force times where I could travel.
Okay.
And so I would set up with my social worker at the clinic, like, hey, I am going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, as an example. So I'm going to be here on these dates. Can you schedule me somewhere close to where the address was where I'd be staying? And of course, they coordinated that. So that did make it easier for me to travel when I wanted to. And although it wasn't often, whenever I did do that, it was as efficient as it possibly could be.
Oh, good.
However, there was this one trip I went to Atlanta, and I was feeling really good.
Okay.
And so I said, well, let me take advantage of this, because
okay.
enjoy feeling good,
okay.
as one of my friends says.
I can't wait to hear what happens or what you do.
Well, me and a few friends, my big brother who lives in Atlanta, shout out Garrett, and a couple of friends decided to go play golf. So a day of golf, and I'm like, okay, well, it's hot, sweating,
sure.
so let me drink more.
Okay.
A normal, to compensate.
Normal human reaction.
Sure. And then, you know, a couple of beers here and there. And then also just phenomenal food afterwards, including jerk chicken wings, lamb curry, and a few other things we indulged in.
Okay.
The next morning.
How did that work out for you, Pesh?
The food was great.
Okay.
The
good
golf
experience.
Was good.
Okay.
The golf had the best score of the day, so that made me feel good also.
Okay.
The next morning, we had a dialysis treatment, and it wasn't great. We had to extend that to an 8-hour session.
In outpatient?
In outpatient.
Wow. They dialyzed you?
Dialyzed me for 8 hours, and
I'm not sure I've even heard of that.
Well, part of it was around 4 a.m. the next morning, I kept just coughing up phlegm. It was bad.
Okay.
It was really bad. And so went in the morning and we had no choice.
Okay.
I had to stay there. So lesson learned.
Okay.
So I don't regret, as I like to say, regret's a waste of time.
Sure.
So I did enjoy my time, but I also learned like, okay.
You're going to, yeah, pay me now, pay me later.
Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely. So did that. And that was probably one of the worst sessions of dialysis through my dialysis phase I had. And of course, another part of me in the dialysis phase, which I was on dialysis for 15 months before my transplant.
So always in-center dialysis?
Always.
Or, in-center dialysis as opposed to peritoneal or home hemo?
Yeah, okay. I did not want to do that.
Okay.
I did not want to do that. I made that decision because in my mind with peritoneal, it was, although the benefits were there where you could dialyze every night at 8 hours while you're sleeping, as they say, if I went home and I saw the equipment, I couldn't trick my brain into thinking I wasn't sick.
Mm.
So if I could just have the outpatient, get it done and come home, did I feel like shit? I did.
Yeah.
But at least I wouldn't have to see it at home.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that is something that I know I've talked to folks in my circles, right, that while we are huge proponents of home dialysis, right, there is something to be said for medicalizing your home, right? would I want a dialysis machine in my bedroom, right? With the most private sanctuary that we have as little humans, right, is our bedroom, our homes. And so, yeah, I can see that that's a fair point. And maybe being able to mentally compartmentalize is healthy sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Absolutely.
So always in center, 15 months.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, we had the transplant. But before the transplant, part of the process was, of course, making sure you're healthy enough because I'm going through transplant evaluation at the time.
Okay.
And that was at Methodist Hospital in the Houston Medical Center.
Okay.
And so it was also a waiting game because I did have a family member that volunteered to donate a kidney.
So it'll be a living donation?
Yes.
Okay.
But we weren't a match.
Okay.
And therefore, we had to go through the paired donation stage.
Okay.
And therefore, I had to wait for that paired person. And going through that process, there was a couple of times where I was told, hey, you're going to have a transplant.
Sure.
And it didn't happen. Something fell through. Something broke down in the middle to make that chain a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day when I received a call from my coordinator. At Methodist in Houston, yes. And Heather said, hey, Pesh, we have a match. I'm like, okay, great. And the funny story was that this person read a Facebook post and was going to volunteer altruistically to be a donor for somebody else.
I love those stories.
And found out they weren't going to be compatible. And yet my coordinator stepped in and said, wait a minute, but you are good for Pesh.
Okay.
And so that's just... through pure luck or the powers of the universe came to be. And that's how I met my match. And shout out, Chris. So thank you for doing that. And so that led to my transplant. And that was August the 7th of 2018.
Okay. Wow. And, you know, we might want to put a pin in that because the living donations, the whole conversation, the pair, the swap, I mean, the chains, they, you know, they're amazing. So we might want to put a pin in that and come back to it.
Amazing and very important to talk about.
Yeah. For I'm going to, I kind of know the answer, but I'm going to say, so you had a transplant and everything was wonderful and happily ever after.
Yeah. And again, back to not taking things for granted. Everything was amazing. It's like, wow, this is how it feels to be healthy again.
Yeah. So did you feel good right away? Did you need delayed graft function? You didn't have to go on dialysis post-transplant?
Did not.
Great.
But I also don't remember the first couple of weeks afterwards of the transplant. A lot of medicine, a lot of pills, a lot of visits right after just to make sure everything's working properly.
Okay.
And everything was good and life was good and I'm enjoying it. I'm traveling again. I'm apparently a glutton for punishment because there was at one point where I traveled to Australia for 2 weeks and then got back 3 days later. I flew to Ireland for looking at some hotel projects.
Well, you flipped your mojo in Australia, right? You had to go back as a successful transplanted recipient.
Make sure I can make it through this time. Yeah, without a doubt.
Got it.
And then got back from there and went to Ireland. So anyway, enjoying life, living life.
Sure.
And then fast forward to February 2021 and my kidney transplant rejected. So...
was that a sudden... how did that?
Yeah, it's sudden. I just wasn't feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you know? Did you think it was your? When you feel ill, I'm just going to ask you the question. When you feel ill, is that the first thing you think of? Is your transplant rejection, or do you
absolutely
ignore it? Or did you ignore it like the man you were in the past? I'm like, no, it's fine.
No. So I became ultra sensitive in that sense of if I had a headache, I'm like, oh shit, is that my kidney transplant? Like, that's where my brain was.
I think that's
because of the journey.
Of course.
And then it's found out, like, okay, I'm feeling worse than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go get labs.
Okay.
Went to go get labs, and my creatinine went from the normal 1.01, which I had been since transplant, I believe, to it doubled up to 2.16.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, that's not good.
Uh-huh.
So consulted with my nephrologist. And, all right, let's give it another week, drink more water, and, you know, just be as healthy as we can.
Sure.
The following week.
Were you, can I ask you, Pesh, were you being healthy at this point?
Yes.
This scared you straight? You were?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you weren't out golfing and drinking? Okay.
I didn't leave the house.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
That week, I'm like, okay, I'm going to stay indoors. I'm going to drink plenty of water, eat healthy food.
Okay.
Absolutely. No Chick-fil-A, nothing processed. Absolutely.
Great.
And then the next week, I'm... back to like, I still don't feel really good. Let me get labs now just to see if there's been any change.
Sure.
And it doubled again from 2.16 to 4.61. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to back to Methodist and let me go get checked in the hospital and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that was my rejection.
Wow.
Yeah. And then 4 to 5 biopsies to try and figure out what's going on. A whole multitude of different treatments like plasmapheresis and all these other things that were just painful. Mm-hmm. And then again, mentally taxing to go through this because I waited like that 15-month period on dialysis seemed like forever to wait for a transplant, especially since there were a couple of times where like, hey, you're going to get one, but no, you're not.
Sure.
And now it's like you go through everything and you think, again, to your point, oh, wait, life's going to be great forever now. We're going to be just happy-go-lucky, doing whatever we want and enjoying life to its fullest. And yet here we are back in the hospital.
Yeah.
Because what should be working isn't working at all.
Yeah.
And so that was very disheartening.
Sure.
And again, another wake-up call to say, all right, just this can happen, I know, but it is happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was in 2021, and here we are in 2024.
Still with the original.
Still with the transplanted kidney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that time waiting for a kidney and then getting it. And then, you know, I mean, that is the reality for so many patients and, you know, individuals, right? So many people.
Yes.
And, you know, the wait time for a deceased donor kidney can be up to 10 years in some states, right? There's a lot of variability, but it's usually years if you're waiting for a deceased donor. You know, a living donation can be a little bit, but even then, right, I would think that a living donation, even with a paired exchange, it might be a shorter time frame. So waiting the 15 months, enjoying life, and then, you know, having a hiccup in that, you know, in that plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a fair point too. And it's just, right, it's just being honest about the situation that a kidney transplant is not a cure for kidney disease. There is currently no cure for kidney disease. And so even a transplant is considered the best, or often they call it the gold star renal replacement therapy, right? It's the gold star treatment with a living donation, having really the best outcomes for any of the RRTs.
Yeah. But again, proves nothing's guaranteed, right?
Yeah. Thanks for sharing all of that, Pesh.
No, absolutely. I'm happy to do that. And again, like I feel like I said this last episode, but I feel like I've rambled on so long, I really need to let you speak.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting too, right? Because I was thinking about this as we prepared for the podcast. I mean, I've talked to, in my 15 years, thousands of quote unquote patients, right? Thousands of folks, family members living with kidney disease. And you know what? I've never really had a close friend who has kidney disease or has been on dialysis, right? It's always been in that patient professional role.
Okay.
Even though I've been very close to some patients, it's always at arm's length.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't hear all the stories like like a friend would, right?
Right,
you don't always hear that. So, you know, it's easy for me to kind of get sucked into your story just as, you know, two human beings talking about this.
But yeah.
I guess we should talk about my time in kidney too. It feels very different.
Yeah, because you didn't stay a renal dietitian. So tell us more about how your career evolved.
I know. And for all the dietitians out there, you know, it's so competitive. I waited all this time. You know, I went through an internship. You do all this. And I was a dietitian for about a year. So I was in Philadelphia. I was working for one of the big dialysis, the LDOs, the big dialysis organizations. And I just, you know, I've always been just a really accountable person. Mm-hmm. You know, I've just always kind of like pick it up and I'll handle it, you know, kind of person. And the clinic really just needed somebody, right? If you've worked in dialysis clinics, you know, it's just part of, right? If you know, right? There's leadership turnover, right? Who's ever managing the clinic, the nurse turnover, the techs. I mean, it doesn't take much for a facility to get in a space where, you know, it needs some love, it needs some extra TLC. And that's really how I felt about Walnut, you know, and the patients. In my time as a dietitian, I had gotten so close to the patients, I really felt this, you know, obligation, commitment, call to step up. And so, you know, when I was at the LDO, I took part in a leadership class, and I had a bunch of nurse mentors, you know, great nurses who took this plucky, you know, dietitian who didn't know anything and, you know, taught me so much about, you know, nursing and nephrology and how to manage a clinic. I mean, I never had direct reports before. You know, okay. I was working in a psych hospital, you know, that was my first job. I never had direct reports. But, you know, they saw something in me and I thought, well, you know, shoot, if I'm gonna step out of clinical, then like, let's step out of it in a big way. So I was at Walnut for a little bit before I got an internal scholarship from the LDO to get my MBA. And I previously finished up my master's. So in my internship, I chose, you have to sit for an internship before you can sit for your registration exam. And the internship I chose had graduate credits attached to it. Okay. And I did that very purposely because I was like, well, once I finish my internship, I'm already halfway through a master's.
Right.
And I'll just finish it, right? So sure, I kind of chipped away at that. You know, over the years. So I had finished my MA and I did my thesis, of course, on outpatient dialysis, nutrition, right. education. That's where, you know,
very apropos.
From here on, everything out yeah. is just dialysis. It's just yeah. everything I talk about.
Yeah.
You know, so I finished that. I got my MBA at Temple Center City Campus. It was great. Mm-hmm. I walked to my clinics every day. I was living in the city. You know, it was fun times. You know, I just really felt, you know, that I was ready for it. And,
yeah.
maybe like your story, like everyone's story, like it didn't turn out, you know, it didn't turn out the way I thought it was. It was super hard.
Yeah.
It was a very challenging job. So I worked for DaVita at the time. And so we call them FAs, a facility administrator.
Okay.
But generically the term is a clinic manager, right? So I was the FA, the clinic manager at Walnut. And, you know, it was, right, number one, you have the patients and the clinical aspect, right?
Yeah.
Then you have, of course, the staff, right?
Sure.
So you have to coach and hire and retain amazing people to do
yeah.
this job. And then, oh, by the way, you also have all the regular corporate stuff, new projects and trackers and reports and spreadsheets and meetings and
yeah.
conference calls and, you know, really got thrown into the deep end,
yeah.
you know, pretty quick. But it was a great experience. And as one of my first mentors in this space says, Evelyn, you know, she always says that if you're swimming upstream, you're in the wrong pond.
Sure.
And kidney dialysis time always felt just the opposite. It always flowed, right? Like
yeah.
my career grew organically. Like I never,
yeah.
you know, I didn't plan on it. I just want to be a dietitian.
Yeah.
Actually, in my first interview, Karen interviewed me and said, "What's your 5-year plan?" And I said, "Well, I'd love to be a jazz singer, honestly,
okay,
but
well.
I can't sing. So I think I'm just going to be a dietitian forever."
Okay.
We both kind of chuckled and like, that was it. I didn't have a plan. I was going to be a dietitian. I don't know. It was fine.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it was great. And, you know, just such special, as hard as it was, just such special memories of the years managing dialysis facilities.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I've spoken about and you and I've spoken about is my love of the people along my journey
mm.
and how the great experiences, whether it's mentors, colleagues, peers. And you had mentioned, Evelyn, you mentioned your mentors.
Mm-hmm.
How did that play a role? If you can expand a little bit on just the people in your journey and how that's helped guide you through to
yeah.
where you are.
Yeah. So I think the first, you know, reflecting on the people in my journey, you know, the first thing, of course, is individuals with kidney disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Folks on dialysis, their loved ones. I mean, you know, those stories, you know, they don't leave you, right?
Sure.
You know, young people my own age, people from all walks of life. You know, and I was working and living in Center City, so you
okay.
would see the same people, you know, at CVS or right at the drugstore, just, you know, in the neighborhood. But yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is just being, you know, bearing witness to regular folks, right? Just having this diagnosis that can be so life-changing.
Yeah.
And just seeing the strength and grace and just the raw vulnerability and humanity of seeing people in this position. I mean, it forever changes you as a person.
Right.
You know, the thousands of people that, you know, the thousands of individuals that I've met over the time. And then, you know, a lot of nurses. I spent a
yeah.
lot of time with nephrology nurses. You know, so I think some of them and, you know, those things have always stayed with me, even though, you know, since I left the clinics, right, I did a short stint in home healthcare,
okay.
which wasn't my cup of tea. But with where the landscape, you know, with where the healthcare landscape is going, that home health experience is still really valuable with where we're, you know, we're looking at a lot more in-home interventions for folks. You know, but it really just comes down to, you know, it started by helping one person one-on-one as a dietitian. And then I felt like I could have an impact perhaps on a couple hundred if I ran clinics.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I moved up into CMS contracting, you know, really the possibility there to touch essentially, you know, the entire population of folks on dialysis through special projects, through quality improvement, through some of the resources we create for professionals and patients. You know, really, you know, the people never, just like you, Pesh, right? I mean, that's what you're in it for.
Yes.
You know, are all those amazing, wonderful people that have, you know, touched my heart, changed who I am, and you know, you just never forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, I have to. I mentioned my time in dialysis and you being a manager in FA, just the amazing people that I experienced through my journey in dialysis from the patient perspective, just great, just caring. I could count on them, my social worker, the administrators, the dietitian there. Everybody was great and always ready to help. And it was just a big thank you. And you became like a part of the family in a sense. And I always did appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that, Pesh. You know, I think too in this space, and we'll talk more about our goals and our ideas for this podcast, right? But part of it is to have a resource and a place for all those wonderful folks out there day in and day out, you know, providing life-sustaining care.
Yes.
You know, a place to support them. So, you know, and it's a big job, right? So when I was at Walnut, just doing one clinic, you know, a big center city, we had a small peritoneal dialysis program, you know, but we're running 1,500 dialysis treatments a month. That's a lot of room for variables, right? That's a lot of room for, you know, needing, right? A somewhat medically complex treatment, 1,500 of those, you know, it's a lot. So, so when I left, you know, I think I alluded to, right, I took a short stint out of dialysis. You know, I realized too from my time in operations, kind of like the hospital role, sometimes you know what you want by knowing what you don't want.
Sure.
And so I knew a hospital dietitian wasn't for me. And I also knew, you know, the nitty gritty managing outpatient operations wasn't for me. I'd rather move a mountain than keep the trains running.
Yes.
Then I stepped out. At this time, I had moved to North Carolina to manage some more clinics. I moved again. I just kept moving farther south until I found weather that matched my clothes and my personality. Brought me to Florida. And that's really, you know, things got really good. I moved to Florida. I was a new mom. I have a wonderful daughter. You know, we love it here. I got this super cool job working for HSAG, managing the ESRD National Coordinating Center, which is the only national special projects and quality improvement for all dialysis facilities and patients and professionals. So it's very focused just on the ESRD portion. I did that for a while, loved the job, met some amazing professionals and patient advocates along the way, still have tons of connections there. I got into human-centered design, did some really cool projects and like really intellectually, you know, stimulating and interesting stuff, you know, thinking new ideas and bringing these like visions to reality. Super cool. I also spent a little bit of time, you know, in CKD population health.
Okay.
Which we can talk about then.
Yeah. But I go back a little bit. Can you give me an example of one of your cool projects that you worked on?
Yeah, sure. So we, right, so it was contracting. So every year you get a statement of work. And one year they added a paragraph, one paragraph that said, using human-centered design, increase home dialysis utilization and transplant waitlist metrics.
Okay.
That's it. And they just handed it to you. And I had just become the executive director. And so it's like, you know, I love the phrase, they often use the phrase, they're tight on the what and loose on the how.
Okay.
Which I love. And that's me to a T. You tell me sure. what you want me to do.
Right.
I don't need to know all the steps. And so for that project, you know, we kind of divide into two teams. I ran the home dialysis. I was a lead for that part of the project.
Okay.
We used human-centered design. We interviewed top performers, patient advocates. We went on like a little tour and traveled all around the country, me and my colleagues.
Nice.
Learning from these people, taking all these big ideas. We ran ideation sessions, bringing folks together in really creative, innovative ways to brainstorm.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, from that, we had like 20 concepts. We chose four and we rolled those out nationwide. And some of that work is still out there, right? This has been shared with all 7,700 dialysis clinics in the country. So
7,700.
Yeah, that, I think is where about dialysis wow. facilities. Yeah, we'll talk about more of that. So right through the NCC and the ESRD network program, you know, you do have the possibility of making these really, you know, large, you know, these that really large ripple,
yep.
so to speak, with the resources. Yeah, thanks. Let me talk about that. It's been a while.
Yeah, no kidding. But I can tell by the way you speak of it, you do have a passion for all of this. No matter the, it's not been a straight road.
Sure.
It's a few, you know, twists and turns, but you do have a passion for it. And we can tell by listening to your story. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks. I, you know, I think at some point in it, I just felt like this is part of, right, this is part of my life story.
Yeah.
Working in kidney. And, you know, since then in Florida, it's an absolute privilege. I'm on the board of directors for the American Association of Kidney Patients, just a mm-hmm. great organization doing wonderful things. It's a patient majority board. So I'm very honored as a clinician
yeah.
to be on that, doing some great things. And then too, spending some time in CKD population health,
okay.
value-based care, which we'll put a pin in and explain
yep.
more of that. But,
without
you know,
a doubt.
I'm very excited for that aspect of the future for kidney disease.
Yeah.
And it's topics like that that we're going to talk about in future episodes.
Absolutely. Yes, please stick with us. Sarah Eve, we'll be up in our next episode.
Okay, thanks, Pesh. Episode 3 of Talk Kidney to Me takes us into the present day. We're going to share our vision and goals for ourselves and for this podcast, what you can expect to hear from us as we take this journey together. This has been Talk Kidney to Me with your hosts, Sarah Eve Schaefer and Pesh Patel. If you're enjoying the show, hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode.
Follow us on social media at Talk Kidney to Me on LinkedIn. And Talk Kidney to Me, that's the number 2, on Instagram.
We'd love to hear from you. Email us at info@talkkidneytome.com or contact Pesh on LinkedIn or through Instagram at akidneylife. Sarah Eve can be reached on LinkedIn or at sarahev.com. Until we talk kidney again, light and love to you all, and thanks for listening.
The Talk Kidney to Me podcast is for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional health care services, including the giving of medical advice. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions.